We are in 1 Kings chapter 2, so go ahead and open that text up if you will. A quick reminder of what we've been looking at. Chapter 1, you will remember in our previous study, Nathan and Bathsheba go to David to appeal on behalf of Solomon when his brother Adoniah tries to come in and take the kingship away. And of course, David responds to that. He anoints Solomon publicly, which was important and significant because having the name of David behind him helped with the population, the people. And then, of course, Adoniah's rebellion collapses because of that. And then as we were closing out, the last little bit we were discussing was David helping to prepare Solomon to rule. And of course, this has been an ongoing thing. He's done other things in the past, but now he's really closing things out as he's preparing to leave this life. And that's where we were as we get into this study. In this study, what we hope to cover is we'll continue to look at David preparing Solomon, and he'll give him some instructions and also make a request of him. And then after that, we'll see the end of David's life. There at verse 10 in chapter 2. Solomon then goes to act on some of what David had recommended and asked for. And then he'll also do some things that he thinks are important. And then as we close out chapter 2, we'll see the reign of Solomon established. And then as we get into chapter 3 and on, he'll go right into doing great things and some not so great. And so we'll kind of look at those each and see what considerations we ought to make. So let's go to chapter 2. Let's look at those first four real quickly. We won't read them, but just what's the first thing David reminds Solomon of? What's his first reminder to Solomon?
To follow God.
Be faithful. Absolutely. It's a reminder of the covenant that God had made with David and was going to make with Solomon. What was that? That if he will continue to keep, first to walk in God's ways and to keep the statutes and commandments and rules and testimonies of the law of Moses. You remember in one of our other classes, we looked at in Deuteronomy, what did God, is this Deuteronomy 23, what did God require of kings? Do you remember? We looked at it on our Wednesday night study. Absolutely. And that was something that prophetically, I mean, it's a while between that and then that first king Saul. But God had already established in the law of Moses that when a king would arise, that king was required to make his own copy of the law and to maintain it. Now, are they always faithful with that? Well, as we go through kings, we're going to see. They're less often than they do. But that's something David is reminding Solomon of here. All right. And then there's a promise attached at the end. If Solomon does that, what's the promise? What will God do in response? What? Okay, he'll be giving peace. What else? Bless him. Yes. So if you look at verse 4, he says, if your sons pay close attention. Now, this is a continuing bargain, right? Solomon would need to fulfill it, but then also would Rehoboam and all those to come after. He says, if they do that, you shall not lack for a man on the throne of Israel. So that goes back to a promise God had made to David long ago. Okay, so let's go to verse 5. Verse 5, then we go from a broad view, like David is saying, number one, keep it right with God. Okay, and now let me give you some other things. The first thing he says, And I think these are recommendations, not necessarily requests, but David is making recommendations. Let's read a little bit of this. So he says, you also know what Joab, the son of did to me, how he dealt with the two commanders of the armies of Israel, Abner, the son of Ner, and Amasa, the son of Jether, whom he killed, avenging in time of peace for blood that had been shed in war, putting the blood of war on the belt around his waist and on the sandals on his feet. So the first person David brings up is who? Joab. Okay? Just keep that in mind. We'll come back to it. So Joab's the first one. And then he goes on. He says, act therefore according to your wisdom, which when we get to chapter 3, I know it's after all this happens, but what do we note about Solomon? Very wise man, right? And so David is appealing to his wisdom. Act wisely with Joab. And then he says, according to your wisdom, but do not let his gray head go down to Sheol, that's the grave, in peace. Okay, so that's the first person, Joab. Verse 7, but deal loyally with the sons of Barzillai, the Gilead, and let them be among those who eat where? At your table. For with such loyalty they met me when I fled Absalom, your brother. And there is also, okay, so before I get into Shimei, the second group, if you will, are the sons of Barzillai. And so David is saying, show them kindness. And then he talks, then he brings up Shimei. He says, Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjaminite from Bahurim, who cursed me with a grievous curse on the day when I went to Mahanaim. But when he came down to meet me at the Jordan, I swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with the sword. Now, therefore, do not hold him guiltless, for you are, again, what? A wise man. You know what you ought to do with him. You shall bring his gray head down to down with blood to Sheol. So twice he mentions bring somebody down to Sheol, one without peace, and the other one he says bring him down with blood. All right, so let's look at these. So look at each of these groups, and why does David bring them up? Okay, first, Joab. So when we consider who is Joab, what do we know about him? Yeah, he's the commander of the armies, right? He's the, modern vernacular, he's the what? The secretary of war, if you will, for David. And now whoever would transition next would have to make a decision about him. Yes. So, actually, did he support Absalom? No. Yeah. He didn't support Absalom. He stayed loyal to David. But when Adonijah came to take power, Joab followed him. Now, this is why I say this is a piece of advice and not necessarily a request. Although David has reasons to dislike Joab and to be, you know, to be angry with him, I think David is trying to look out for Solomon. Because what has Joab proven himself to be? He has proven himself to be a murderer. Disloyal. I think it's a disloyalty. You can't trust him. And he's proven himself to be disloyal. How? Well, number one, we can go back to Abner. In 2 Samuel chapter 3 and verse 27. Now, before I get into this, who's Abner, by the way? Or who was he? For Saul, right? He was Saul's commander. But what had Abner done right near his death? He what? Yeah. Yes, at the end he tried to make peace with David. And so David had told them to leave him alone, right, to let him be. But Joab, like you mentioned, his brothers were killed by Abner, and in a time of peace, he murdered him. So this wasn't an act of war in 2 Samuel 3:27. He killed him in a time of peace when he had returned from Hebron. And so it struck him down. It says that in 2 Samuel 3:27, there he struck him in the stomach, and so he died. And so basically it seems to be that he took a spear and rammed it in his stomach and killed him. Pretty brutal. But Joab had... How does that show disloyalty? David's the king, right? He's the supreme commander of all people in Jerusalem. And yet he doesn't listen to David's command, but does his own thing. That's the first time. Mm-hmm. And especially after David had given his approval for the peace to happen, he's not only been disloyal, but he's dishonored David in killing Abner. So that's the first time. And then again with Amasa, if you go to 2 Samuel 20 and verse 10. He then murders Amasa. Says 2 Samuel 20 and verse 10. But Amasa did not observe that the sword was in Joab's hand. So Joab struck him in the stomach again, and spilled his entrails to the ground without striking a second blow, and he died. Then Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued Sheba the son of Bichri. So again, he goes out on his own. He murders Amasa. So he's now proven himself disloyal twice. What was the third time? Anybody remember? If you don't cheat and look on the board, it's all right if you don't know it. You can look up on the board. Absalom. David had asked, "Do not kill Absalom." Now, you might question David's sense in that after all Absalom had done, but David did not want him killed. Yet, in 2 Samuel 18, what does Absalom do? I'm sorry, what does Joab do? He kills Absalom. Huh? Yes. Yeah, he was upset that he'd let him live. Well, Joab wasn't going to do that. And so even after David again has commanded him, do not kill him, he does it anyway. So three times just in just following commands, he's shown himself disloyal. And then, of course, the fourth time he shows disloyalty is Joab knows who David has picked to be king. And yet he goes against David's choice of Solomon and follows Solomon's brother, Adoniah. And so I think David is just trying to let Solomon know, this guy, you can't trust him. And then for all four of those, so far, Joab has escaped justice. All right, we'll come back to him later in the chapter. But we'll see that Solomon will bring justice to him. All right, now let's go to the sons of Barzillai. So who is Barzillai? Anybody remember him? Okay, so David says, he asked, deal loyally with them. Now, as in opposition to Joab, Barzillai showed not disloyalty, but loyalty. How? Do you remember? Yeah, you remember when David had fled because of what Absalom was doing. David ran out. Well, Barzillai took David and his company in. He cared for them. And David had promised him, reward for that. You can go to 2 Samuel 17, 27 to 29. You'll see where he provided food and supplies in one of David's darkest hours and really helped him out. And so what is David asking for here? What? No, here in 1 Kings, what is he? What's that? And not just to be kind to him, but he says, let him eat at your table. That would have been a real place of honor for these men, to sit with David, to eat with him. It would have meant a lot in their community and culture. And so David says, you deal kindly with the sons of Barzillai. Yes, because you remember David asked him, when David is returning, David asked him to come with him. And Barzillai's like, no, I'm going to go home. Yeah. So I'm assuming he probably passed in his homeland. And so David, wanting to extend kindness, says, bring his sons in. Yeah. Oh, yes. Who was that? Oh, man. Who was the young man that came with David from the house of Barzillai? Oh, there was. Y'all can look that up. There was. You're right. Who? That's him. Yep, that's it. Yep, that's him. You're saying, was there any AI in that? So that was the young man who'd come. But now the sons are the actual sons of Barzillai. All right, so let's go to the third, and that is a guy named Shimei. What does he want for Shimei? What does David say? Notice the words here. If I can get back there, let me see. Let me get to where that is. Let's see. I'm looking at the wrong place here. Let me go over there. He says with Shimei, he says in verse 9, he says, and you shall bring his gray head down with blood. What does that imply? Execution, right? He says, I want you to execute him. I think it's same thing, different wording. It'll be my opinion. No, it's not. It's just, you just don't want to, like when you're writing a paper in school, right? You don't want to keep using the same line. You got to switch it up a little bit, be colorful. But that's violence, though. That speaks of violence when you think of bring it down with blood. So that's violent execution. Don't let him die of old age, in other words. Don't let him live out his life. But there's a problem with that, isn't there? You may notice the problem with that request. Okay. Now, king can execute judgment on somebody, right, for crimes. Okay. That's not justice, right? That's vengeance, right? Okay, there's the bigger, that's a big problem, but this is, to me, a more direct issue is what had happened with Shimei. Okay, so If you go to 2 Samuel 16, what's happened in 2 Samuel 16? David's hightailing it out of town, right? Because this is in the midst of Absalom's rebellion. All right, so he's getting out of town. What does verse 5 say? 2 Samuel 16, 5. When King David came to Bahurim, came out a man of the family of the house of Saul. Catch that? The house of Saul. So this is one of Saul's relatives, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera, and he was and he came and cursed continually. Now that is not four-letter words, but what does it mean when it says he cursed him? That's true, and he's using words, right? Like I talked about this morning. What does that mean? Yeah. Insulting him. Insulting, right? That's kind of the idea. You think, if you recall Jesus going to the cross, and Mitch kind of pointed this out a little bit. What were, in the verses Mitch read from Matthew's gospel, what were those different groups of people doing? Mocking him. They were insulting him. That's similar, I think, to what Shimei was doing with David. He's throwing curses at him. He's insulting him. Insulting his kingship, like you say, he's throwing rocks at him, which is not, he's not trying to hurt him necessarily. What he's trying to do is further insult him. I'm throwing rocks at you. And so that's how it leaves, okay? Well, go a couple chapters over. You know, some things happen. Absalom's rebellion fails, and then David returns successfully in 2 Samuel 19. Does he meet the same Shimei?
No.
He's a different guy, isn't he? If you go to 2 Samuel 19 and verse 18, you have Shimei this time doing what before the king? Do you remember what the verse says? He fell prostrate. I like that word, prostrate. That kind of, the English Standard just says fell down, right? Prostrate, at least in my mind, gives a more like, humble act, right? You're like completely, like you're at tornado drills at school. You remember those tornado drills? You tuck in, right? You're down to the ground. And he's showing some real humility. Now remember, again, who is Shimei? He's of what house? Saul. He's related to Saul. And I guess he thought David's going to get his comeuppance for what he did to Saul when he's leaving at 16, and when he comes back at 19, he's like, well, maybe I was wrong. And then in verse 19, he asked David, let not my Lord hold me guilty. Remember how your servant did wrong on the day that my Lord the king left Jerusalem. So he begs forgiveness, and David offers it, doesn't he? Maybe a little bit unwillingly, but he does. Just think about that. That's right. Right? David has now, he's gone through life. He's near the end. And one of the things he remembers is the insults of Shimei. He has not let that go, has he? He's like the son, the brother this morning, right? The older brother. He didn't let it go with the younger brother. David has not let Shimei go. So I think there is probably some personal thing with Shimei. I also do think that David is looking out for Solomon in a way. Again, disloyalty. What will destroy a kingdom is disloyalty.
And you have to believe that David would have had some
Yeah. And he would have heard, if David's bringing it up, he's heard Shimei before. I guarantee it. This is not the first time Solomon has heard about a man named Shimei. And as we can see later in the text, Shimei was a man of some means. He's not a poor man. He's not a pauper. He has some means. He has servants who run away, and he goes after them. Which, when we get to that, I still don't quite understand what's going on. And so it may be, and I'm guessing here, notice what I'm doing. I'm going out a little bit on subjectivity, so take it as it is. But he probably had some influence. He's also of the household of Saul. And so I wonder if David worried about the influence he might have in the kingdom. We've already seen divisions, right, with Absalom. Well, we had it with Saul. We've seen it with Absalom. Adonijah, right? We've seen some disloyalty already, some fractures, and so David may be trying to prevent that.
So the part of the problem, I guess, then, that it didn't go to one of Saul's sons, it went to David.
Yeah, and it may be for Shimei, right? We don't know the heart of all of it, but yeah, that very well might be it, and he holds some real bitterness about it. A Bibishef, yeah, that's it. Well, Bibishef, he was, he's crippled, but he was Jonathan's son. So, I believe, if I remember right. And he's David's son, Jonathan's son. He's still around, and he'll be around for a while. But he'll come back up. Yes, ma'am. That's a good question. It was widespread. I mean, he was a man of war. He had a lot of battles, and some of them were inevitable, with the Philistines, with some others surrounding entities. Whereas Solomon, he doesn't have any of that. That all was accomplished under David. And so Joab did some good things. I mean, we can look at all the negatives. I mean, he was a good general in military conflict. He won wars, which was good, right? He defeated Abner, the man he killed. But good question. I have to think about it. Yeah, and it was Joab who fulfilled that command, you may remember. Well, and that might have led him to, we're speculating, so you got to be careful with that. But he's seen David do some things too with Uriah. That whole sequence was really horrible. Good comments. All right. Say that one more time. I missed the first part.
It was a respect thing, an example for other people to see.
Respect with who?
That was Shimei did not respect.
Oh, yeah.
And so Solomon's, respect my father. So, so that was the example of you that you need to respect the king.
Yeah. Well, and you'll notice Solomon doesn't kill him outright. Right? So we'll notice that. In a little bit, but yeah. So I just wanted to encapsulate what's going on here, what the king is being reminded of. The king, in order to be a good king, Solomon must learn to punish wickedness, reward faithfulness, remember mercy, right? Exercise discernment. What did David keep bringing up to him? Use your what? Wisdom. In chapter 3, that's going to become really vital. Or we're going to see how I'm sorry, better way to say this. We'll see somewhat the wisdom of Solomon and then protect the kingdom. Wise leaders do not treat every person the exact same way. They treat each person according to true justice and faithfulness. All right. Any other questions? So that's David. That's it. With this great king, not everything was great, but overall, he was a good king. If you get to verses 10 through 12, David passes from this life. It says, verse 10, and David slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. At that time, in the time that David reigned over Israel was 40 years. He reigned 7 years in Hebron and 33 years in Jerusalem. You'll see here on the little thing, y'all can come up afterwards. I know it's small print, but here's a timeline of the kings, and you'll notice the first three kings reign over all Israel, and they reign for how long? When you put together Saul, David, and Solomon, so 120 years they reign over a united kingdom. And then, when we get to the end of Solomon, we'll see how things break down with Rehoboam and Jeroboam. And also note here, you remember when David, during the time of Saul, where was the headquarters, the capital in Jerusalem? No, it's not until David's reign that gets solidified in Jerusalem. For 7 years, he reigned in Hebron. Again, I know it's small print. You can come here and look. But Hebron's just south of Jerusalem down here. Eventually, he'll move up north to Jerusalem, and that's where the kingdom will be established permanently. Verse 12, so Solomon sat on the throne of David, his father. I wonder what that moment felt like. And his kingdom was firmly established. Now, it says that in verse 12, but we really get the solidification of it as we get to verse 46. We'll have a reminder of that particular statement at the end of this chapter, after Solomon has done a few things to get the ship right. And so he'll reign on the throne of his father. All right, I'll probably have to stop here in just a second. But we do have Adonijah. He's kind of a loose thread out there. He hasn't been dealt with yet. Do you remember what is he, at the end of chapter 1, what does he come to David and ask for? No, not yet. No. End of chapter 1. We haven't got to that part yet. What does he ask for at the end of chapter 1? Don't kill me,
okay.
Right? Remember, he fled and then asked for safe harbor. And David gives it to him, doesn't he? Well, he can't just let things be. He could have went on, probably lived his life. But he does something odd, and I want to ask you about it, and then we'll close out. I won't read all of this, but if you go to chapter 2, verse 13, he goes to who?
Bathsheba.
He goes to Bathsheba, and he asks for an interesting individual's hand in matrimony. Abishag, the Shunammite. Who is Abishag, the Shunammite? Yeah. So if we go back to chapter 1, uh, Oh, me. Okay, so she is not romantically involved with David, but she did provide a service for him. And not that kind of service, but more a caretaker service. If you go to chapter 1 and verse 3, now I do think it's interesting. I don't know why. They sought a beautiful woman. I don't know if an older lady who maybe wasn't as beautiful couldn't have done the same job. But they purposely sought out a beautiful young woman in Israel. And they found this young lady named Abishag. And they brought her to the king. The young woman, notice this, was very beautiful. And she was of service to the king and attended to him, but the king knew her not. So what does that kind of tell you?
They were too old.
y'all have taken care of older people, right, who maybe near the end, their awareness of what's going on is not great. It seems like David's awareness was not very good. And so here's this young lady. She's caring for him. I don't know if she's being a blanket for him, but maybe I think she's bringing him blankets. But she's caring for him. Now, if you come to chapter 2 next week, go ahead and read this. I know I'm out of time, so I'll shut up. But you have this interesting request, if I can get to where I want to be. If you get this interesting request from Adonijah that he wants to marry her. Is he wanting to marry her because he loves her? Or is there some ulterior motive? And that's what we'll talk about next week. What is his ulterior motive? Because when you read it, it may not first be clear to you. And you're going to have to ask yourself the question, why does Solomon react so angrily to this request? All right, we'll stop there. Thank you all so much. We'll come back to verse 13 and go through this section. I'll endeavor to go a little quicker next week, but we'll pick it up back there.